Call this meeting to order, the regular meeting of the Finance Committee, November 1st, 10 o'clock.
I just need my pen.
I'm on number two, where I'm considering the finding of, that the result of the COVID-19 emergency that we're going to meet by teleconference, and I'm good with that. Are there any comments from the public?
I do have a hand raised, sir. Okay. John Sullivan.
Great.
Marty, is it okay to bring up a specific billing item with the conversation that's on the agenda, or do I need to do it here at the comments from the public?
What's it relate to? It relates to one of these items on the agenda?
Yes.
Developer deposit.
No. This has to do with billing errors.
Well, why don't you bring it up then on the billing errors? Probably be better context.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
No other hands raised.
So, we have a presentation regarding Tyler Technologies. Is that Paula?
That's actually Jolinda from Tyler Technologies, I believe. Oh. Shall I make her the co-host, Paula?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, Jolinda, you are going to be the co-host. Welcome to the meeting. Thank you very much for joining us. I will stop my sharing so that you can share your screen.
Good. Thank you, everybody.
Hi.
Get to screen two. Well, why won't it let me share screen two? There. Can you see that?
Not yet.
If not, you're not seeing it yet?
No.
Well, I selected screen two.
I don't know what screen two is, but.
Oh, I've got multiple monitors.
I see.
Jolinda, if you'd like to email it to me or Paula, we can share it for you, and then you can just tell us to go to the next page.
Paula, do you have it where you can share it?
Did you make any changes to what we sent you?
Just minor things that I can speak to.
Okay. Let me pull it up.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
And then I'm going to make you the co-host, Paula.
Actually, I think I've got it now.
Let me try. I got to make you the co-host again, Jolinda.
Sorry.
There you go. That's fine. We'll all get a chance to play co-host by the end of the meeting. Yay. Okay. We can see your screen.
I'm used to Teams, not Zoom, so I apologize.
You're doing great.
All right. If you can see my screen, I'll go ahead and get started.
I see it.
Thank you very much.
All right. So first off, thank you for choosing Tyler, but working with Tom and Paula, we thought it would just be a good idea to have a quick brief presentation about the implementation that we're starting and kind of give you a high level overview. These first couple slides, I actually had Tom and Paula give me their thoughts on what your goal is by implementing the software. And basically, like most companies, it's to implement a system that's going to talk to each other, it's going to be streamlined, and make it easier for your staff to communicate. So this was the goal that they came up with. And again, I'm not going to take up much of your time. I know you're all very, very busy. But the project objectives, again, it goes into, these are objectives that your team set, but basically we want to use new process and development, streamline, make things simple and intuitive, eliminate overly, you know, different systems all talking together or trying to figure out how to get to talking together, eliminate standalone systems, just make it easier for day-to-day operations and communication between departments, which I believe we can actually do for you. I think you're going to be very happy. The criteria for the project success, again, I asked for Tom and Paula's input on this, but the criteria is to successfully convert your old data into the new system, get rid of all of those standalone systems, and again, communicate between departments and applications. We also need to make sure that we get all of our users trained sufficiently. And I will share that I've shared with Tom and Paula that I'm a little concerned about that one. I know you guys have got some staffing challenges, but we're going to get through it. We're going to make this happen. And I think everybody's going to be fine. And then again, just efficient decision-making and communication. That's going to be key for our project. It's just to make sure that we're all talking together and we understand each other's needs and timelines. So how this works is there's, you have your team, which is consists of you, the board, going all the way down to your employees, the end users of the system. And on the Tyler side, we've got your executive sponsor, implementation manager, myself, your project manager. And then we have your implementation consultants, or ICs, as we call them. And then behind that, we've got your technical services. And a lot of the technical services people, your team is never going to talk to. They're never going to see them. They're conversion analysts, developers, forms writers, those kind of people. But there's a large team here at Tyler supporting your implementation. So how do we govern the implementation? From your side, it goes from your executive sponsorship, the board, down through your project community. And on our side, from the executive management down to your ICs or our implementation team. So we need the top driving down to the base level. Now, should we have issues or challenges, which there always are, that communication, that escalation process is going to go the exact opposite way. Your end users, your staff should go to your project manager, then to the steering committee, and then the executive sponsor. On the other side, if you have an issue or a challenge, then that should be escalated to your implementation team. That's your first point of contact. If they can't resolve that for you, then you reach out to me and I'll work with the team to get that resolved. And if I'm not doing my job, that's when you then go up the next level to implementation manager and then executive management. So it's just the opposite of the way we're passing down how we're going to be doing things. Escalation goes the exact opposite way back up that chain. Project and implementation overview. Tyler uses a six-step implementation process. We have initiate and plan, which we've already done. Right now for utility billing, we're in the assess and define stage. This is where we're doing our current future state analysis, deciding how we want to build the configuration and everything, which is what we do in prepare solution stage 3. That's where we start building the platform the way you need it with your codes, your solutions, and get it defined the way that you need it to work. Then stage 4 is project readiness. That's where we go ahead and we upload the database, we test it. Your team goes through and makes sure everything came across correctly, that all the accounts are there, that everything's spelled correctly, that the reports look like they should, all of that testing there. And then once we get sign off on that, we go into full live production. And then we do stay with you for a little while. There's a transition team that'll go ahead and stay with you for several weeks to close out the implementation. So it's a six-step process, and we'll have a sign off on each one of those. for your project right now, we have started phase one, which is the utility billing. That's going to be your water and your gas, your online component, mobile work orders, standard edition of Tyler Content Manager, or you'll hear me later refer to that as TCM. And we have started that, and our estimated go live cutoff date is 4/21. Now, the next stage, next phase, not stage, the next phase would be then your core financials, fixed assets, your AR, project accounting.
Jolinda, we have a comment if you're prepared for one, ma'am.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to be clear. On the previous slide, you have water and gas. We just missed it. This is Tom Hennig, by the way.
Yeah,
hi, Tom. Water, sewer, security, drainage, and solid waste.
Yes. I'm
so we
sorry.
We want to make sure that we're not advertising that we're going to start billing for gas.
Okay. No.
We're going to publish something like this. We need to be correct with what we actually are billing for.
Okay. How would you like, Tom, you and I can change that before.
Yeah, we change it and give it to Amelia to post as the official copy.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Phase two then is when we actually get into your core financials. Right now, I don't have that starting until June. I am looking to try to get us an earlier date. Again, I'm concerned about staffing levels and trying to go live at the same time we're starting core. But I'm going to work with Tom and Paula on that and see what other options we've got. So, but right now, those are the dates that we can put in. I know you guys wanted to get live, so I'm trying to change this live date before October. So we're still working on that. Then phase three will be your payroll or your personnel management, taxes, all of that, paychecks, position budgeting, your benefit enrollment, that next phase of payroll. And then the last phase will actually be your employee self-service time and attendance. And the reason for that is because we have to have core financials and the general ledger all built and working. And then we also want to make sure that payroll is functioning correctly, that everything came through right, everything's processing right, before we add that third element of employee self-service where they enter their own time and attendance. So it always comes last. And then converting your legacy documents into the Tyler Content Manager, the TCM. So right now, that's our timeline. And we just wanted to make sure that you guys were in the know and understood and to hopefully answer any questions that you might have.
You talked about the billing and the pecking order of people in our organization. Have we established who's going to be the power user?
That would be a question for Paula and Tom. I'm thinking Paula, is that right, Paula?
Yes, for right now, I will be the power user. However, there might be a secondary just for backup.
Okay, that's my understanding how it was going to go.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, I would always recommend you have at least one backup.
So the power user is the one that gets the most training. Is
yes.
that right? So they can train others?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And if you you could break that out and have multiple power users depending on the module. You know, maybe Paul is going to be the power user for core financials and somebody else is going to be the core power user for utility billing. You could yes. break it out, but yes, you need to assign someone to be the power user for each module.
Okay.
And it does kind of help if even if they're not the primary power user for, let's say, core financials, they're going to be the primary power user for utility billing. Sometimes it's helpful if they still go ahead and set through those other classes so they understand how the two communicate and work together.
And Mark, also to add to that, you know, once we have some of these positions filled, we'll be able to evaluate a little bit better who would be the power users for each module as well, and the backups.
And what does it take to be trained? Huh? Does it take many hours to get trained?
No, there's online live training with an actual live instructor. And we just need to make sure that everybody who needs to go through that gets signed up for those classes. I believe I already sent the list of classes we were going to, the list that I sent was pretty massive, and you guys don't need all of those. But what we need to do is make sure we get signed up for the courses that we do need. Well, actually, no. Wendy sent you guys a detailed script for you for your install, right, Paula?
I'll have to double check.
Okay, I'll double check as well. But regardless, we need to get signed up for those classes. There's a different set of classes, and there it does take some time commitment. Some of the classes, in as far as like configuration training, can be 3-4 hour courses. Some of them are 3 or 4 hour courses for 2 days.
Let's talk about the billing module we're doing first. How much time does that take?
Depends on the, I'm not sure, but with all the modules that you guys have gotten, I'm not sure what the total time commitment is, but I would guesstimate.
I'm just talking about the utility billing. As we implement other ones, we do the training before that, right?
Right. But with utility billing, you have the online and you have the AR and you have, you know, there's multiple layers in that AR. But I would, off the top of my head, I would guess that there's probably at least 28 hours.
Okay.
For configuration. And then once we get through configuration training, there's a whole nother set of trainings for actual live user training. And that's when your end users, your frontline employees, they need to also take that go live training.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But I want to encourage, you know, to sign up for those classes early, because they do fill up and we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to go through those.
Okay. So that's coming up here shortly then, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
We just finished our CFSA and now we're going to go back behind the scenes and not be quite so present and start doing the converting of your legacy data into Tyler format. So things will kind of slow down a little bit again for a little while on your side, but we are working diligently behind the scenes to get everything converted.
Okay. Do we have any?
I don't have any questions. Jolinda, if you'll stop sharing your screen, then I'll share my screen again.
All right.
Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or anything, and I'm going to go ahead and drop off.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. And now you should be able to see my screen again.
So we're on item 5, which is the Treasury bond subject. Who's doing that?
I'm doing that, Martin. This is Tom.
Wait. Tom's going to go ahead and cover that for us.
Can you turn down your speaker? Amelia?
I can.
Like that?
All right, good morning.
Can you hear Tom?
Yes.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
This is what happens when you don't have an office.
Can you hear Tom?
I do.
Okay. Turn yours down. Okay, I don't have the best of news here. Amelia, can you?
I'm completely turned off.
Turn your phone down.
Okay. When I'm getting my office out of, when I'm transitioning out of my office, I came across a document from 2016, and it's just a couple emails between the developer, John Sullivan, and his financial person, Tony Velez, and then controller, Eric Thompson, saying that we took the $540,000, the phase two monies, and we were going to put them in our LAIF account. And so I hadn't seen this email in the past, but John, you had asked, or Tony had asked a question on, to follow up. That, this was April 15th of 2016. And he had sent Eric a question. You could have, would you be able to have any say in where the money is invested? And that's where the email chain ends. So John, do you recall in 2016, this back and forth with the controller here at the district?
I'm unmuting. I remember a conversation with him that precipitated the question about the investment, you know, options. And IL, what do you call it? IL.
Wait, LAIF.
Yeah. Did not at the time seem like a good place to be domiciling that money, since it's supposed to be segregated.
Well, if it's in our account, we account for it, we segregate it in our books. So what I need to do now is I need to go to our LAIF agent and ask them to give me a full accounting of, at least from 2016 forward, of all the deposits we turned into LAIF. And then we keep track of that interest on a regular basis, because that's how we use to pay the water treatment plant loan. The interfund loan uses the LAIF interest rate. So that's pretty easy to go backwards and apply what the interest would have been, because Eric in here said that the interest is included. So he said that any interest earned on the funds will be accrued to the deposited funds. We still have to prove that, but I'm guessing since Eric was here when all that happened, he was probably right, but we still have to prove it.
Yeah, well, the date, my belief is the date that the gross amount of the proceeds of the bond sale were, I believe, January of 15, just for your information.
Okay.
So no accrual should start before the bond sale date.
So you're saying the interest accrual has to begin on what date?
No. If it originally was sitting in the bond proceeds at wherever it is that the bond administrators were handling it, it would be the date, you know, it would be the date that Eric is discussing going into LAIF, because anything earned while it was in the, while it was cash in the hands of the issuers would have been handled different and separately. So you got to know that date.
We do know the dates we made the withdrawals from Wilmington. And that's the date you want, you believe you should start accruing the interest. That's
whenever, fine. Yeah, whenever Wilmington took that 540 and you guys deposited it, that would be the beginning of the interest accrual.
Okay. More on this later.
Okay, thanks for the update. We're on number six, the Cal Waste agreement. Who's doing that?
I'm so sorry. Will you? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Are we ready to go on to the next item, sir? I don't have any hands raised.
No, we're on number six. We're going to talk about the Cal Waste agreement.
Perfect. Topala, this is your item. We don't have a memo today, but we do have the redlined agreement and then the changes that our attorney and our friends over at Cal Waste have made to the agreement. So this is the clean agreement.
Yes, this is the clean agreement. I apologize for not being prepared for this. With a staff report, just a quick discussion, we wanted to post this to the Finance Committee. This will be moving forward to the board at the November meeting. And this is just the introduction of the draft final contract with Cal Waste.
So is our attorney done reviewing it?
Yes, he has finished, and they've completed making all of their changes for this draft.
Okay. So the idea is to send this on to the board at the next meeting?
That is correct.
I went and looked at Exhibit 1, which is all the rates, and I'm trying to correlate what the new system looks like versus the old system. And I take it that
very end, huh?
I take it that we're going to have a new gray trash can. And that correlates to our existing brown trash can. Is that right?
Scroll down, Amelia.
I'm not finding exhibit. Here's exhibit 7. Okay, let's go to exhibit 1.
Right, and I'm not all that clear on the details. This is really, something that Tom spent a lot of time working with Cal Waste on. Tom, you might be able to speak to the specific colors for the garbage cart. It does look like they've changed the colors. It's probably due to the SB 1383, but that would just be an assumption on my part. Tom, do you have additional information on that?
So are we muted?
Go ahead and talk.
Yeah, SB 1383 requires the cans to be specific colors, and it also requires the organic waste to be picked up every week. So, and I forget exactly what color the cans are out here, but I believe the gray can becomes just your regular waste can. The green can becomes yard waste, and also that's where the organics need to go. And then I believe recycle is blue. But basically, they have to add a second trip, or they have to add a trip every week for the organic stuff. And then all their rates are going up just because they have to tool up their program to accept organics. And they're also under requirement by the state to make their trucks more fuel efficient. And that they're actually, the state's trying to get them to go all electric garbage trucks by the year, like in the next 5 years. So okay.
I understand that. So Amelia, can you go up one page? So if somebody has a 35-gallon gray cart and that's the trash, what are we billing? What would we bill the customer if we could right now? What would we bill them?
Okay, so the $25.98 rate, if we could bill them that rate actually today, on top of that, we would have it's called the franchise fee, and then there's the county.
The county fee, which is $2, I believe. And then if we could, starting January 1st, we would charge them the extra $3.75 for the organic waste.
Correct.
So I'm talking about...
Say that again, Martin.
So this says on the first of the year, we're going to get charged by them $25.98. If we had the ability to charge the ratepayers, it would be $25.98 plus two plus anything else?
Plus about, I forget what the franchise fee ended up being, but it's about $2. So it'd be an additional $4 on top of that. So there's the county, what do they call it? The county
surcharge.
No, yeah, county surcharge.
Some kind of a surcharge.
It's called a tipping fee, that's right. And then the franchise fee helps cover the cost of running the program.
Okay.
So it got up to almost $30.
So then the next column says the July 1st of 23, they get to add another fee. But the section 402 that's in the contract says that the adjustment's based on the CPI. Why do we know what it is already?
They're guessing. That's their estimate for the additional cost of the organics. The rates will also go up based upon an industry CPI adjustment.
So that's a guess at the CPI.
No, that's the rate that I understand, the 375 and the 350 is an additional cost each year,
yes,
as they try to retool their operation to accept organics. The 2598, the 3192, the 5334, those will also go up by an industry-driven CPI adjustment for garbage and waste haulers.
Except it says right there, this is after section 402 of the CPI. So my question is, if that's a guess, that's fine. If it's hard number, it doesn't make sense.
I haven't read section 402.
You want me to go up to 402, Marty, and we can look at it together?
You know what page it's on?
Yeah.
Watch.
$4.02. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Hey, give me a second to read this.
Receive 100% of the labor customer price.
You know, again, I haven't looked at this in a while, but if, as I understood it, that base rate that you saw for the 38-gallon can, yeah, was going to be increased by the Bureau of Labor stats for water and sewer trash collection services.
Okay.
Base would go up, and then there'd be the additional, I think it was $3.75 and $3.50 to help offset their cost for their organics program. So the cost of trash is going up a lot. It's going up a lot everywhere. And this is just the result of us being contracted with Cal Waste. And to be clear, our agreement with Cal Waste is, it expires in 3 years. So we had about a 17 or 18 year agreement that we modified about 7 years ago. And that 10 year extension expires in 3 years. They are requesting that we extend another 10 years on top of that in order to allow them, to allow our customer, our vendor, to be able to stay solvent as they have to retool their trash hauling practices to, you know, stuff like the organic and stuff like electric vehicles and such as that. So this is actually a new franchise agreement instead of just over the past 2 years, we've just re-upped it every year and counted down to the end of the last, you know, 3 years from now, we'll have to do a new agreement. Or in this case, we will have extended it another 10 years. So you're committing to 13 more years with Cal Waste after being with Cal Waste for about 17 years, I believe.
Okay, I understand that. I would have thought the January 1st rate of $25.98 would include the cost their costs for collecting organic waste.
Well, I think by the Martin, we can look at that, and when we put together the staff memo, we can explain that in the staff memo. If it still doesn't sound right and we want to take it back, we can come back in December and review it again. And of course, if it's the desire of the district or the board to take this out to bid, that's a whole new ballgame. So if you want to go out and put out an RFP for trash hauling services, I'm sure that it would get some attention.
It seems like that's not feasible if we got to get going the first of the year. I would agree to send it to the board, but when you do that, see if you can answer these questions that I proposed.
Got it.
One last question. There was, it looks to me from reading this contract, is that our ratepayers still have to pay to have a special pickup.
That's right. The bulky waste trash pickups. The plan would be July 1 of 23, the agreement would include the bulky waste trash pickup, the one free bulky waste trash pickup every year.
Where does it say that?
Search on the word bulky.
Yes, sir.
Hit again. Okay, start over. What was that first one?
It says right there that it's $74.
Right. The intent is to, as of July 1 of 23, to add back in one bulky waste trash pickup.
Well, I don't see it in here.
I know. We'll make sure it's in there, Martin. We'll find it. So, I know I've seen it in previous versions.
They're large item. There you go. That's what they're calling it. Large item.
Why would we do that if we have no way to pay for it?
They would build it into their rates.
But we can't charge for it.
If we have another Prop 218 protest that says we can't raise our rates, no, then you can't charge for it.
We can't charge for it in July 1st.
Because you would establish a new rate through the rate setting process that was protested this year. We'll do the same thing next year.
It seems to me that it shouldn't be come into effect till we have the ability to charge for it.
Well, that's the plan. The plan was to add the bulky waste trash pickup to the rate setting process next fiscal year, which begins, we start setting the rates in March when we do the Prop 218 notice.
Well, maybe you can find a contract language that allows that it's going to be free.
Okay. I recall seeing it in the agreement, but maybe I haven't looked at the agreement in a few weeks.
It's all hunky dory if the ratepayers pay for it, but if they're not paying for it, I don't know why we'd do it.
Sure. No, we won't do it unless it's built into the rates. And again, we can't raise the rates. Like as of January, we're paying an additional $4 subsidy for every trash pickup, for every customer, for every residential customer, because we have to pay for it, yet we weren't allowed to increase our fees. So hopefully our fees can be increased next year and get back on track.
Hey Tom, this is Mike. I had a question. Do you think that it may be possible, if there is no contract language about a free bulky item, to put contract language in such that if, we don't get the funding, then we don't provide, and that service doesn't get provided, or does get provided should the district get the funding? I don't know how we would articulate that contract language.
Yeah, we can change the language in the contract to indicate that if it's approved by the rate payers, that it can be added back into the rates. Of the 2,800 homes here in the district, I think it's like 1,060 of them actually took advantage of the bulk waste trash pickup. So Cal Waste wants to put the free bulk waste back, pickups back in there because it's a popular thing for the customers. But again, the district doesn't need to be subsidizing everybody's trash hauler services. The idea with Prop 218 is the cost of doing business is what's recovered from the ratepayers. And right now we're not recovering our costs associated with garbage right now. So we'll have to get caught up in that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, so I'll add this to the board agenda. We'll add into the memo how much the rates will raise and clarify those questions for you for the organic waste. And then we'll find out about bulky waste pickup, Martin.
Okay.
Perfect. Let's go back to the agenda.
So we're on number 7, developer deposits.
Yes, this is me. Just really quickly to provide everyone with an update on the developer deposits. As previously discussed, we had an external consultant assisting with the compilation of the records and some of the reconciliations. However, the bulk of this work is now back onto district staff to complete. And we are working on getting those reconciliations, reviewing each account individually and determining what the balance sheet really entails so that we can have that information ready for the developers and send those statements out along with balances due or checks remaining. And so over the next couple of weeks, we're going to focus our energies on this and get these updated and get that out to the developers. So just a really quick update on where the status of that project.
That sounds good. Is there any comments from the public?
I don't have any hands raised.
Okay. Thanks for that, Paula.
You're very welcome.
Number 8, utility billing.
So this is also me. So essentially this is bringing back to the forefront the discussion that we've had a few times at the committee level. When we went through the August billing for the September utility bills, there were a lot of residential accounts that were being incorrectly charged. And this is a little bit of the breakdown. I believe, Martin, you were the board member that had requested this information. Ultimately, we have about slightly over $48,300 in billing errors. A lot of these errors were created during the move-in, move-out process. This resulted in the district undercharging residents for specific flat rate charges. Specifically, what happened is when the account was created, it was copied from a previous account and the manual charges were carried over into the new account. And ultimately what happens when you manually set up these flat rates is that when the rates are updated through the Prop 218 process and we set the rates at the beginning of the fiscal year, those manually created codes in each of these accounts did not update. They don't automatically update. And so some of these things have been going on for several years. The bulk of this is the trash surcharge fee that went up from $1.30 to $2 in fiscal year 21-22. So this is the bulk of it at a little bit over $29,000. And this is nearly all of the residential accounts. And so the ones that were set up correctly are being charged the correct $2 amount from the September bill moving forward. However, there's a significant number of those and we're working with the utility star programmers to get all of these manual amounts removed and updated to the correct code so that it will automatically update if we increase those fees in the future. I'm sorry.
So this surcharge fee, that's 70 cents. How many months did that go on?
It was for, the $1.30 went up. So it's the full year of 21-22 plus 22-23 through the October. So it's 16 months.
So 16 months, are they all corrected now?
They are not because it's the bulk of the residential accounts.
When is that going to get corrected?
We're working with the programmers right now to get that corrected for the November billing.
So it's 16 months times 70 cents, right?
Correct. But it's approximately 2,500 accounts.
16 times 0.7. So it's like $11 a customer.
Right? Correct.
What is it going to cost us to rebill everybody for the $11?
Well, ultimately, this is really why we're bringing this to the committee, is how far back do you want to go? Do we want to go back 3 years? Do we want to pick a starting point of this month and get everybody's corrected? One of the things that I do want to bring to your attention is it's not just the trash surcharge. There's residents that have been charged for things that they should not have been charged for. There's inconsistencies in the trash. A lot of these, what actually sparked this was looking at the trash for the 38 gallon and the 64 gallon. And those had not been updated for several residents. So some residents owe $100, some residents owe $90, depending on how long they have been here, and we didn't charge them correctly for the full 16 months.
The surcharge fees is 16 months. The wrong trash gallonage is a different subject, isn't it?
It's all part of the same analysis that we did. Ultimately, it depends on when the resident moved in. The majority of these residents, with trash, residents have changed. They've swapped out from 38 to 64, from 64 to 96, and vice versa. Some of them have added extra. There are a couple of cases where they have two 96 gallon trash cans and we've overcharged them by charging the full amount for two 96 gallon trash cans when we should have been charging them the discounted rate for the secondary 96 gallon rate. And it depends on when the move in, move out. Not everybody has that 16 months. Ultimately, the $29,000 for the trash surcharge, once we get the analysis back from the programmers, we'll be able to determine how much that true cost is. But this is the $29,000 is an estimate, assuming that all 2,600 residents are being improperly charged. But I do want to bring up a point. There are a few residents who, if we do go back the 3 years, it's going to be a significant amount owed to the district.
Why do you go back 3 years on this 70 cents? It only started 16 months ago.
Ultimately, this is what we're posing to the committee, is how far back do you want to go for us to remedy these? This is, standard and customary. Agencies typically go back 3 years to collect debt or to do refunds. And so we want to make sure that we're enacting a policy that's consistent across the board. So even though it's only $1.70 or $11 for some residents might owe the district $3,000. And so that's really what we want to make sure that we're getting the clear direction from the committee and ultimately the board. How far back do we want to go? Do we want to put that in our policy to go back the 3 years, which is the standard and customary? Or do we want to just cut our losses and move forward from this point and not make that policy determination at this time?
So if I go back to my question, how much is it going to cost us to retrieve 29 grand?
Ultimately, it would just be adding an adjustment to the bills and we would go through the programmers to do this.
So how much is it?
I would say maybe $1,000 for their time and effort, not including staff time.
Martin, this is Tom Henning. I want to jump on this real quick. We run into a little bit of issue with misusing public funds if we're gonna write off this much money. So we do need to take a hard look at going back. And Dick Shanahan told us prior, at least for security and security fees, we go back 4 years and 4 years only. We can't go back. In this case, it was security fees we were refunding. We were only allowed legally to go back 4 years. But
The it's not misusing funds if it costs us more to collect it than the than we'd collect.
That's a difficult answer to give, because if it's true that we're $29,000 in arrears on collection of fees, it's definitely not going to cost $29,000 to program the change. And this doesn't account for commercial accounts. All Paula's looked at so far is the residential accounts. There are some commercial accounts that have a balance is due, and there's even one commercial account who thinks we owe them money. So going through and auditing these utility bills is a critical part of the Tyler project, and it's a priority because we need to let it be known quickly how much is owed if we go back 3 or 4 years for our customers. And I again would defer to the attorney and say, how far back are we required to go, or can we go? And we should go that far back. The district is not in a position to just be giving away money, and we're actually not supposed to be giving away money.
So, and I also wanted to make it clear too, Martin, is that it's not just $29,000 there, it's $48,000 that's owed to the district.
Yeah, this is Mike. It's just a thought, and as we think about this, I think we need to make sure moving forward that we are consistent, no matter what the board decides on how far we go back, that we do remain consistent, and we probably would want to create a policy once the board decides how far back we want to go. That way we have that in place, and we are consistent on how we do that.
From my perspective, when the issue of if somebody's been overbilled, I think we ought to refund their money. But if they're underbilled, then I guess we need a time period to go back. But so if you say it's not going to cost $29,000 or $48,000 to recover the money, then I guess the you said in here something to the effect that if it's not a tax like security, that we should go back 3 years. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So the security and drainage tax measures, we can by tax and revenue code go back 4 years for both refunds and collections. But we don't have a policy that speaks to all of the other charges that we, all of our other utility charges. And so really it's, again, it goes back to being consistent in how we apply both refunds and collections and how far the board would like to go back to do that process. So for us to be standard and customary and be consistent with other agencies, the majority of those agencies go back 3 years.
Yeah. Well, it seems like number one, it's really important to get the bills, future bills, updated to the current rates. That's got to be a mandatory.
Yes, and we are working on getting those corrected.
And the going back, you say the billing people just do it, but somebody's got to go figure out every individual account and figure out when the billing started to be wrong, except for the 70 cents, that's obvious. But the other ones, you're gonna have to go through all these accounts. I can't imagine it's $1,000 to go back through all those accounts and find out.
Well, actually, I've already gone back and done all of the analysis on each individual accounts. Ultimately, it's just a matter of me sending it to the programmers and giving them my analysis, and then they can write the program that will correct these bills and then apply the charges.
So who's checked your analysis?
I actually have other staff assisting me with this and reviewing it as well.
It seems like it needs to be bulletproof. And I don't say you did it wrong. I'm just saying it just needs to be checked and double checked because we don't want to do it again. So I don't know who's doing it, but it ought to be somebody separate from you that does an independent accounting as to each account. Otherwise, there's a potential of having an error again.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess my recommendation is to, number one, pay back people who were overbilled. Number two, go to 3 years for everything but taxes, and go to 4 years for taxes. But I think they're just going to go to the board for their approval.
Very good. I'm adding this to the board agenda. Marty, I do have a hand raised. Are you?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you. This is the item that I asked about at the comments from the public. 4 months ago, we discussed with staff an account number 5000800, which was we were told was a parcel number that the district had been billing incorrectly. It's an account. The parcel number that they gave us does not exist. It's been revoked. When the gardens converted from 3 parcels to 17 parcels under our ownership, we continued to get billed under this account number. The amount of overbilling went from, it's mostly drainage, I believe, went from, it should have been $107, and it was adjusted to $891. And we notified the district in March 31st of 2021 that we were being incorrectly billed. We continued to pay because of your penalties and interest policies. We continued to pay the amount such that we are owed a $34,200 overcharge on this account. And that would go back 4 years from the date we notified you. We have attempted to find out what is remaining. This account number 5000800 is, they're still turning out a bill in July and August, what I believe they believe is a corrected amount, but I don't know what parcels it refers to. There's no APN numbers on this. And the APN number that was on it before June, when we complained again, was the revoked parcel that the county converted to the 17 parcels when we recorded the large lot subdivision map. So my first question to staff is, which parcels are now being billed under that account number? And secondly, did the refund amount get calculated?
Is that something you can address?
Yeah, I'm
offline, or you want to do it here?
Hi, Martin. Yes, I can answer some of that information. No, the refund amount has not been calculated because we've not focused on the commercial accounts just yet. But ultimately, we found 28 parcels that are attributed to that specific account. And we're trying to unravel all of the ins and outs and purchases and sales of those specific parcels related to that original parcel. And working with the Sac County to get some of that information, there have been several of the properties have been purchased a few times. And so it's really just unraveling those and those parcel splits. And then once we have all of that information from the county, we'll be able to determine what new accounts we need to create, who we need to backbill for. Part of this discussion is giving us the ability to go back 4 years for the security and drainage, as well as the 3 years, if the board approves that, to collect that debt from the property owners that should have billed in lieu of your bill, John. So we are working on it. It is a little bit of a time-consuming process, and we are working with Sac County to get that information. But ultimately, there are 28 parcels that this one is being billed for. And so,
well, let me just jump in here. You may say that there's 28 parcels, but there's only 17 parcels on that 53 acres, plus 3 roadway parcels that have no allocation of anything on them. So at the end of the day, there may be 20, but we have sold property, and you're well aware of who we sold it to. We have developed property, and we create an invoice for our tenant that we get a duplicate billing on. But there's not 28 accounts that came from that 53 acres. There's 17. There's a sliver along the highway, which we keep getting, which is supposed to go to Caltrans as part of the highway construction project. But what you're saying is not accurate. We get bills for Bel Air. We get bills for building C, D, Taco Bell, Paul Frank, the gas station, the hotel, the extended stay parcel. We get all those bills, and we pay all those bills. This is the same 53 acres that's been billed since, according to your records, 2012. When we brought this to your attention, you said it would take a week or so. We contacted you. You said you need a little more time. It's been months, and we're still talking about, you know, talking to the county. Well, it's crap. We don't have to talk to the county. You can go on the parcel viewer and look at every parcel that the county has out of the 53. You don't need to go to the county and get it all. It's very handy and available to you at all times. We're even paying taxes and fees on the detention basin because we haven't conveyed it to you, because we still have a passive recreational opportunity there, which we are still, you know, looking at. But, you know, not only are we, you know, paying all of our fees on these other parcels, but this is $700 a month for 4 years minimum that you owe. If we went back to the beginning of when you billed us, it's 2012, would be 10 years. So please don't shunt us off any further. Our developer deposits that we're owed hundreds of thousands of dollars on, and overbilling on these accounts and misbillings and miscues and all of this stuff is just over the top.
I got your point, John, and we're going to have to deal with it internally. So thanks for your input.
Well, thank you.
Is there any other comments from the public? Any comments? I'm back on number 9. Is any comments from
director staff? Comments, staff comments?
Yes. Any staff comments?
None for me, Martin.
Okay. Good. So the only question I have, is there an update on Vanessa's preparation of budget versus actuals for current fiscal year?
I do have Vanessa in the room with me. Let's see if she can comment on that.
Good afternoon, or almost afternoon. We're getting there. So I'll try to make this quick. I don't have a huge update from the last that we presented on the budget versus actual. We are down to kind of the final numbers. We know that we have some cutoff and some variances between the Utility Star billing system and the bank. We're working through those with staff currently. They've been doing research with us, and we've been doing research kind of in tandem and working together to try to come to a conclusion. We're closer than we were a week ago. Probably close. I'm still concerned, again, looking at the last staff report. There are reasons I want to make sure that what hit the bank is what hit the system, and what hit the system is what hits the budget versus the actual report. We probably won't get it nailed down in time completely for the board meeting, and we will footnote disclose what those differences are, but we're going to continue to dig in as far as we can until I get it pretty darn close. And my materiality on this is small.
So
I think for the
next time that it would come before.
So for a board meeting, we will be prepared with preliminary numbers for the utility billing. We are working through the miscellaneous receipt side. We've got some holes there that we're going to send an email to staff today to work through. On the labor side, we're there. I've got an update call this afternoon on that. And then on the non-labor, we did not see that change by a large dollar amount after posting all the late vendor payments. So we're not sure if that entry was pushed through, but we'll have that resolved by tomorrow. And then I'll have a draft report ready for management to look at with some analysis before the board meeting. And then we'll publish that in draft for board.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Sorry, it wasn't ready for today. I was really pushing for today, but.
Well, I'd rather see it without material differences and not have it published until we're confident, so.
Or at least that I can explain the differences. That's really where I'm at. And we are gonna have to tighten up the daily depositing process with our credit card payments. We know that that's causing part of the issue and the daily depositing itself. So we'll make some recommendations in regard to that.
Okay, thank you so much. Sounds like we got to the end of the agenda. I appreciate all your efforts, and we'll see you at the board meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
All right, bye.
Bye, everyone.